Parshas Vayeshev. Vayeshev Yaakov Be'eretz Meguri, Aviv Be'eretz Canaan. Yaakov settled in the land of his father, in the land of Canaan. Why does it say both Lashonos? Why does it say his father's land and Canaan? Don't you know that? So the Panach Raza explains, and the Moshe Vizkenim as well, that Meguri Aviv is saying that where Avram lived. But then again, maybe Avram lived in many different places. We know he also went to Mitzrayim. So how do you know where it is? So therefore it says Eretz Canaan. So you'll know that it's in Eretz Canaan. But if it just said Eretz Canaan, then you might have thought that maybe who knows where in Eretz Canaan. Therefore it says both. So his the place where his father's lived in Eretz Canaan. Okay, fine. The Ganrav and the Marl Diskin explained that it's actually coming to allude to 2 points. What was Yaakov missing all those years? All those years he was missing Kibud Av, which Esav excelled in, and Eretz Yisrael. So now it's saying, now he has everything back. Now he has Meguri Aviv, he's with his father, able to do Kibud Avim, and he's in Eretz Canaan, he is living in Eretz Yisrael. The Baal Turim similarly says that Vayeshev Yaakov Eretz Meguri Aviv, he says, it's Begamatria Yashav L'Kayim Mitzvah Kibud. In other words, he came to be Mekayim now Mitzvah Kibud of Aim, and he said, Beschar the Kibud, that's why Esav got everything that he ended up with. So now hopefully I too will be able to settle in and end up with the, obviously, the right covenant life, but that's what he was alluding to, says the Baal Turim. Okay, big Rashi. Vayeshev Yaakov, Zogt Rashi. Hashem, you go, it's Rashi. At the end of the long Rashis, Bikish Yaakov Leshev V'Shalva. Yaakov wanted to rest in peace. What happened? Kavetz over Exoshel Yosef. That is why Yosef's problems crept up on him. Says Rashi, Tzadikim Mavakshim Leshev V'Shalva. Tzadikim want to rest V'Shalva. Omar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, Lo'idayin LaTzadikim Mashem Sukkim Lam Lo'il Ma'ba. Al-Mashvakshim Leshev V'Shalva Bo'il Ma'zeh. It's not enough for them that they want Olam Haba. They also want Olam Haza. Lamaisa, what exactly is going on here? I mean, we dive in that Hashem shouldn't bring us to Nisyonis. What's going on? Why is there a tain on Yaakov? So, Ramesh Sternbach said that from his Rebbe Ramesh Schneider, I think there are famous stories with him, that Olam Hazeh is not for smooth sailing. You can daven that you hope that you're going to get there, but we have to daven that the Messianist shouldn't come. But we have to know that they will be there. They will be there. That is why we're in this world. When you challenge something, that's how you make it stronger. That's how muscles are made stronger. So to us, when we are challenged, it's to make us stronger. The Yetzer Hara is not happy when we fail. He doesn't like that. His job is to get us stronger. Rav Shiva Rabbi Leif used to say, who's your best chavrusa, the Yetzer Tov or the Yetzer Hara? The Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Tov can tell you, you're going to think, oh, Aleph, beautiful. You're done. Yetzer Tov can tell you, Aleph, you don't know Aleph. Go understand it better. You don't understand anything. And you're going to work on it. You're going to work better. That's the Yetzer Hara's job. So Faker, he's not happy when you fail. He wants you to pass the tests. And Hashem only gives us tests that we can pass. So that is what he says. The Brisker Rav says a very interesting thing, that why does this only come up now? Why don't you see this by Avram and Yitzchak? So Brisker Rav says, because there's a haftacha from Hashem that Klal Yisrael will never be the tsar as a whole. When something is tsar as Klal Yisrael, then it bothers Hashem too much. So therefore, Avram, he was Klal Yisrael. He was it. So therefore, and that's probably also pshat in the myself as similar bunim and everything he did. He was it. Yitzchak similarly as well. All of a sudden, by Yaakov, maybe when he was alone, but once he had the shvatim, now there's such a thing as a multitude of people. So just because Yaakov's bitzar, the rest of them weren't, they knew where Yosef was, and therefore this became a private thing already. So that's why this first comes up now. Oh, as a private yid, you want b'shalva? This world is for nisyonis. Avram and Yitzchak would have been able to get away with it. Chas v'shalom not get away. They, obviously they grew, but they were growing for Klal Yisrael. Obviously, Yaakov is taking great strides for us. He's one of the others, but Lamaisa, Amisa, it was a little bit more of a pratyastik, personal thing. It says that Yosef brought the Lashon Hara to his father. Right? On what? First of all, about that he thought they were eating Avram and Achai, thought they were eating pieces from an animal that was alive. Secondly, that they used to make fun of the Bnei Shvachis and call them Avadim. And third, about Arayas. Now, first of all, there's a Gansa. I don't remember who now on the Rambam, one of the Sram on the Rambam. I'm forgetting how it slipped my mind. He has a whole mahalach that there was basically machlekes between Yosef and the Shvatim. Were they considered Goyim now, or were they considered Yidden? That Ayin Shom, how he works it out, but that's how he works out the whole thing about that Yosef held. Of course, each of them had answers, but the question is, were you like a Yid or were you like a Goy? That's Agam. But anyways, so Rashi says it was Mida Kenegi Mida. That what? That because of the Arayas, that's why Yosef Potiphar. Okay, that's understandable. Because of the, he gave over about the calling of Avadim, that's why he became an Eved. But Zok Rashi, because of the Avraham and Achai, they shechted Asir Ezim, and he didn't get eaten. What's going on exactly? Why is that a parallel? Why does that correlate to each other? So the Rashiva of Knesset Yitzchak, Nois Yitzchak, said, Rav David Mintzer, he said that on Nida Daf Yates, it says that Dam Shechita is Doima to Dam Bacher. In other words, the blood of a young child is similar to the Dam that comes out when you shecht an animal. And therefore, Bedafka, they came to shecht it. In other words, if they wouldn't have had an excuse, they wouldn't have gone ahead with the whole Yosef story. It's only because they were able to fall into excuse, they came out with the whole Yosef story. So therefore, because they knew, we can shecht. If we shecht, blood will come out that'll look like Yosef's. Therefore, let's do this. So that somehow is the Mida Kenegi Mida. The Yosef was saying they didn't do shechita. The Mida Kenegi Mida is that they had, that Yosef had to have a shechita done in his demis of falling down to Mitzrayim in order to help create the story. Because without that, it wouldn't have happened. So it's almost like this is like a payback to him. Okay, fine. We know Ben Zikunim Hulai, right? Rashi says he was a Ben Zikunim. What does that mean? So Rashi says either it means he was born when he was old. Kash on that is what's with Binyamin. Binyamin was born after him. Onkla says Bar Chakim Hulai. Koma Shalom Yishem Ve'Aver Masalai. Everything that he learned from Shem and Aver, he gave over to him. And Davar Acher shows Zivi Kunin Shalai because he looked like him. As far as this question about why, what's with Binyamin, so the Ramban says, first of all, that, okay, so there was a older Ben Zikunim and there was a younger Ben Zikunim because Binyamin was Betzim born many years later. Yaakov was ready to go once Yosef was born. Esav's Lavan said, no, let's stay, stick around, let's do the sheep. And therefore, since it was years later, the Binyamin was born, so it's like there were two Ben Zikunims going on. Interesting, the Chizkuni says, whatever this means, that Lamaisa, it always bothered Yaakov that Rachel died when Binyamin was born, so that was always something that stuck on between him and Binyamin. Obviously, he loved him very much. Like he says towards the end of the parasha, that in the whole story with Yosef next week, how can he let Binyamin go? Come on, that's what he says. It says the Shvatim hated him, right? They hated him. And then when Yosef dreamed, it says they hated him even more. Now, by us, generally, when you hate someone, you hate him. What's this like double level of hating? So Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank brings out very nicely that you see tzaddikim, they're bali midas. When something needs to happen, they will do that. So they held, in whatever their shita was, however you learned the story with the Shvatim and Yosef, whether they held the Yuschaif Misa, whatever it is, they held. Okay, a certain level of hatred is deserving of the first goings on with Yosef. There's a whole shita from a certain mashkiach from England who was nifta young. It's all safer on this. That he says that the Shvatim held, that Yaakov held, we have to treat him like Esav. Like Yitzchak did to Esav, pull him in. The Shvatim held that you have to throw Yosef out, treat him like Yishmael, that Avram threw him out of the house. But anyways, first is Shvatim Hatim, and then, oh no, now he's saying dreams. Now we need to add more hatred. It was all measured. It was very measured. There's the stories of Gedolim, even modern day Gedolim, that when they Chas V'Shalom heard that someone was Niftar on Shabbos, one of their parents, one of their kids, they knew how to hold themselves properly from not crying. Then Shabbos was over, and then they burst out crying. Halacha dictates how we run. There is a story that Mar Yeshiva says over. He was walking with Reb David Pavarsky in Bnei Brak, and this is in the days that they were blasting in the streets in order to build buildings. So Mar Yeshiva said that they did a blast, and he was walking with Reb David Pavarsky, and he jumped automatically. Reb David Pavarsky didn't jump, continued walking and talking in the Gemara as if nothing happened. A couple seconds later, then he slowly turned his face to make sure that it wasn't a dangerous situation. Very, once again, very measured in their ways. A similar story about Reb David Pavarsky. They say that Reb David Pavarsky, usually most people, when they get older, they start walking slower. He started walking faster. So they asked him, what's up? What's going on over here? So he said, it's very simple. When I was younger, I had kliches to slow myself and walk measured. I had strength to make sure that I wasn't rushing into things. Now I'm older, I don't have that strength, so therefore my feet just go, so therefore it comes out that I'm walking faster. Once again, you see this, you say that tzaddikim know how to put things in the correct way in perspective, even into physical actions or emotions. It's Mavor in the first dream. Yosef was a bundle of straw, just like them. In the second dream, the Ramban says Yosef was a person. It just says, I was there, and everyone was bowing to me, the sun, the stars, the moon. So Yosef was a person. Why? What's the difference? So the Ramban says this is exactly what happened. The first dream was Mekoyim how? Because all the Shvatim came down, except Binyamin. They don't know that it's Yosef. So as far as they're concerned, they're all regular people. He happens to be a king, they happen to be Shvatim, they're Jewish, it's beautiful. So that's why they're bowing down to something similar to them. By the second dream, where they know already that it's Yosef, and Binyamin's with them, and Yaakov's with them, so then they know it's Yosef that they're bowing to. So that's why, first of all, it's a person, Yosef, and that's why they recognize Yosef as a person. So that is why the dreams are set up like that. It's kind of interesting that it says, after the first dream, it says they hated him, achol emesav, with the extra yud in the middle. Generally, an extra yud grammatically means many. You only said one dream so far, what's going on? So there are some sheets that learned there was another dream that didn't end up being miskayim. There was another dream that didn't end up happening, and therefore the Torah does not recount it. But really, there were three dreams that he had and that he told over to his brothers. Someone suggests from a medrash, and there is a medrash like this, Agav, that you have a ner, you have a candle, and you have 10 other candles around, and they were trying to put out the one candle, and they couldn't. That's symbolizing that the Shvatim won't be able to overpower Yosef. However it is, whether you learned that was Mekoyim or not, but anyways, that's what they say. It says Yosef on the way, right? He sold the different shittas of how he sold, to who, the Midyanim, the Mitzrayim, where it went exactly. Ba'akopanim, it says on the way that there was nechos tzriva light. There was good smelling things. Why? Why is that necessary for us to know? Why was it there? So it really depends which thoughts, yeshiva, musa thoughts you follow to say how this works. Slabodka, which is all about showing how great people are, says, wow, look at this, that a person can be uplifted even from a good smell. In other words, they're sitting in the middle of nothing, they've just been sold off, and even a good smell can make them feel better. Navardik, I don't exactly understand, but Navardik was about shiflas adam, about thinking about how low a person is up against Hashem. So somehow that you're in such a low matziv that what, even a smell means something to you? I don't know exactly if I chapped that mahalach, how they said over. Kelm was all about this is the way it is, and this is the din. So therefore, Kelm said he had to get an einish to be in this matziv. He had to get punished to sit like this in the wagon, downtrodden. That's what he deserved. More than that, he deserved. So that's why there was a good smell around. Right? Again, the premise of the question is, why should there be a good smell around if he's in such a bad matzav anyways? There it says, he didn't deserve that. You get what you deserve. Whatever you don't deserve, Hashem won't punish you for. Tell says that it shows that Hashem is there to help you in every tzara. Reb Chaim Stein used to say this over, recounting how he has a famous story. He used to say over how it was on Hanukkah on the train to Siberia or whatever, one of the trains. And each night they were able to get enough oil from the wheels of the train in order to light a simple candle, potato, whatever it is that they did. The fourth night of Hanukkah or something like that, it was raining. Everything was slipping off, so they couldn't get any oil. So they decided at least that let's learn Hilchas Chanukah to be Mekayim. Late in the middle of the night, they get a knock on the door. This is in the middle of the war. No one has anything. A man selling candles on the train, randomly. Does anyone need candles here? Of course, they bought it. Gan to Shilas weather. He said it was Eliyahu Navi. Other Rosh Yeshiva said it was Eliyahu Navi that he saw. Whatever it is, and there's similar stories with the Shayfers. The point is that if you stick through with Hashem, then Hashem will help you. That's why Hashem is showing him that there's a little bit of hope. There's a little bit of a smell, of a good smell. The Briskers answer that Pasha, what's Yosef doing when he's alone? Learning Torah, of course. What do you think he did all the years in Mitzrayim? So therefore, if there was bad smell around, like you would think, at the back of a carriage in thrown in, then he wouldn't have been able to learn. So therefore, Hashem did a chesed for him and gave him a good smell so that he'd be able to learn. The brothers throw Yosef in the pit, and Yehuda says, "Ma betza? What monetary gain? What monetary value would there be? What does that mean? Let them kill him, and let them get his money. Let them get his Yerusha. Why is there no monetary gain by killing him?" So Chaim Kanievsky says, because that wouldn't be for right now. That would be for years later when eventually Yaakov dies. That's why they didn't care about it. Reb Chaim Zonnefeld answers that if they wouldn't have made the story the way they did, then Yaakov, Bezdin, whoever's running the show, would always say, who knows if Yosef officially died. There's a rule in the Gemara that if you don't know if someone dies, you put the money on the side until someone eventually comes that says that the guy for sure died. So therefore, they needed to make up a story that he died in order to be a more monetary gain that would allude to what Yehuda is saying. Rabbi Chanan said, "Lule de Mistafina," scared to say, but who knows if all the blood libels through all the ages were because the Shvatim caused this story to happen with the dipping of the blood and the whole thing, trying to save their skins. Who knows if that is what caused all the blood libels. Yehuda and Tamar. So at the end of the story, Tamar almost gets killed with her unborn twins, thrown into a fire. And learn from there, it's better to throw yourself into a fire rather than embarrass someone. Famous story that the Rav of a shul was once in the shul setting something up, and the Gabbai thought that it was someone playing around trying to steal from the shul, and the Rav didn't want the Shamash to be embarrassed, so he went closer to the furnace, and the Shamash unfortunately kept following him until eventually the Shamash started kicking the Rav, thinking again that he was a Ani who was playing around in the shul, and eventually the Rav's beard got singed, and obviously the Shamash chopped. And he stayed in there until the Shamash left, and he would have continued to stay there. The next morning, when he walked in with his beard half singed off, that's when the Shamash felt a little foolish. But you see this, you say, there's a story with the Chanukah Sater, the Rebbe of Heschel, that he was engaged, and he was in his kala's town for Shabbos. And Erev Shabbos, he noticed that his kala was extremely angry and pushing away the chickens in a very not nice way from preventing them from damaging something in the house. And he wanted to break off the shidduch because of that. But he didn't just break off the shidduch. He went to shul, stole a pushka, acted meshuga, got himself thrown out of town, and the shidduch broken because you're meshuga? And his father asked him when he came back, why'd you do that? He said, embarrass a kala? Look to the lengths that he went to protect his kala's dignity, that he didn't want it, but he didn't break off the shidduch. There's another story with the Maral Diskin. It was the middle of Shir, and unfortunately, the Gabbai bringing him his tea that day put in a ton of salt instead of sugar. Maral Diskin drank it so normally, straight down, that when someone ran in a few minutes later, Oyvey, I'm sorry, it was salt. No one knew what he was talking about since the Maral Diskin had perfectly drank it. Famous stories with the with the Chafetz Chaim, with not wanting to embarrass the cook, with certain Chassidish Rebbes, how they ate the whole chalent and everyone thought that they were meshuggah, hogging it for themselves. It turns out they put in kerosene oil. All similar, you say this, of how we have to protect the dignity of others and what lengths we have to go to. Okay, a very nice shtickel Torah from the Sipurne, and I think the Kleokris is similar. The first time that Yosef runs away from Ishus Potifar, it says, Vayonas Vayetze Achutza. He ran and he went outside. The second time, it says, Vayonas, he ran. The third time, it goes back to Vayonas Vayetze, he ran and he went. And the last time, it says, Vayonas, just regular. Why the switch? So he explains that Yosef ran out of that room so fast like he had to get away from Ishus Potifar. But Lamaisa, if he runs outside, that's how he ran out of the inner room. If he runs outside like that, who's going to believe him? You got a lowly Jewish Hebrew slave, and you have Ishus Potifar contradicting. Who's going to believe him? So therefore, he didn't want to make a scene. So therefore, he walked outside of the actual house in a dignified fashion. Ishus Potifar didn't know that. She saw that he ran. She thought, oh no, I have to head him off and tell everyone what the real story is. She starts telling everyone the story, and she realizes in the middle that they have no clue what she's talking about. So she realizes she's going to get framed for lying. So therefore, she realized what Yosef must have done, and that's why she adds the story. You know why you saw him walk out normally? Because he really ran away from me, and then he walked out. That's why it switches back to that. The last time, it says, Vayonas. What's that? She's telling her husband. Why? He's going to say to her, you fool! No one knew anything anyways. Why'd you start spreading a story around that? Look how much trouble you caused. Therefore, obviously, with her husband, she just said, I saw him ran, and therefore, obviously, he ran the entire way in her fabricated story. That's what she told him. And the parsha mentions birthdays. Chacham Sofer says that we don't find in Klal Yisrael such a thing of birthdays except for Parai. Maybe the Yom HaMilah should be something special. The Ben Ish Chai also says that Dafka the Yom Huledes, the Yom HaMilah, is something special. Agav, I always want to connect that it says by Kadshim, when is a carbon ready to be brought as a carbon? On the eighth day. On the eighth day, that's when ready to be brought as a carbon. Some carbons can only be brought till they're a year old. When is that year from? Not from when they're born. It's from a year of when they're 8 days old. I want to connect that maybe it's similar to that. There's a clear, if Bar Mitzvah is 13 years from when you're born, or 13 years from when your bris was, since that's when you actually became a Yid. But Agav, about the birthdays, there's a story, I think I've heard it verified quite a few times, that a teacher many, many years ago was saying about birthdays, Parai, Goyish, and there was a girl who raised her hand and said, I don't know, my grandfather makes birthdays. She says, oh, you know, who knows, maybe your grandfather doesn't really know, doesn't really understand, he's not so from. It goes like, okay, whatever, I don't know. The teacher found out later that it was Ramesha Feinstein. And I don't know 100% if Ramesha himself made birthdays for himself, but Clara heard from his grandchildren that he used to call each of his grandchildren on their birthdays and wish them a happy birthday. But Agav L'chayra would be Mavor from here, that obviously we're dealing with the Yiddish Zach, and that L'chayra, it's not just a yard site of sorts, it's not just a marking of period of history. Mar Shiva Rabbi Leif used to say a birthday is your Hebrew birthday. That's the day that has Shaychus to Shemayim, that is Iris, that has the Chassidim say about an Aliyah on your birthday, but it all centers around the fact that the birthday should be Yiddish Zach, a year when you steig, like you see in the Mishnah Perkei Avos, how you steig through the years. A guten Shabbos.